This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where I give you access each week to the world's greatest athletes and executives about their personal and professional playbook and what has made them champions on and off the field.
Yankees win!
That contract extension was for $176 million.
Touchdown! And a title for the Patriots!
I can't believe it!
I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer. Man, do I have a player today. This is Tommy Tallarico. And Tommy is a unique, he's an athlete. You wouldn't know it, but he really is a Canadian athlete. But he has such an amazing story. I had to have him on the playbook. And it kind of parallels mine. I met him through the great Jim Leyritz because he is a baseball fan and a Yankee fan. Tommy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Well, I know you're like me. I always say I'm the top motivational speaker you've never heard of.
Right.
in our own circles, right, we're just you famous. We go to a club, someone's like, just you. We can't bring the whole entourage. We're not the Jim Leyritz. But, you know, I want our listeners and viewers, you know, I want them to know kind of your story. So let's just kind of take me through who you are and how you got here.
Sure. So I was born in the East Coast. I was born in Springfield, Massachusetts. My mom's Canadian, as you mentioned, and but big Italian family, all four grandparents right off the boat, you know, Ellis Island, the whole thing.
Nice.
And so I was born and raised there, first 21 years. And then when I turned 21, I always wanted to go to California to, you know, my two greatest loves growing up were music and video games.
And doesn't make you unique, Tommy.
Well, right? Exactly. But my cousin is Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. His real name is Steven Tallarico.
Who I've met.
You've met.
Awesome guy, very charismatic.
Yeah. In fact, I introduced Jim to, we went backstage one show. I introduced Jimmy to
Ugly feet,
well.
I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Your cousin has some ugly feet with black tail.
He had those fixed. He had some operations.
Oh, he did?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
They were ugly when I met him, but what a great guy.
So so growing up, I always loved music and video games. I wanted to go out west. So when I turned 21, I got my car. Literally left my parents crying on the doorstep.
What kind of car?
It was a little two-seater Pontiac Fiero. It was all the rage back in the late 80s.
I remember those. Those were cool.
All the rage.
That's the the baby step to a Ferrari.
Yeah, when you can't afford a Ferrari, you know.
Yeah, the Fiero.
You're dreaming. You still got the Ferrari posters on the wall. You haven't had the had the Fiero, you know.
All right.
So I got my car, just me by myself, and I drove out to California. No job. I had no place to stay. No friends out there, no money at all, nothing. I mean, I just literally parents crying on the doorstep. And, you know, my dad was always, he was a small business owner himself, and he was an insurance salesman before that. So he was always into, you know, he would always, you know, when I was a teenager, he was, you know, giving me Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill
for a
birthday present,
nice.
You know, and so it was always, you know, positive mental attitude, this and that. So he was like, go out there, get him. And my mom was like, oh, you can always come back home, please. Right, yeah. You know,
and there was no cell phones back then.
No cell phones back then. Yeah. So, and no GPS and no, you know, he just had a map and I'm like, California's west. I just keep going west. I'll get there eventually. And so it took me about 2 weeks to go out there because I kind of stopped all along.
Most important
the way.
Question.
Yeah.
How many girls did you meet on the way? Because you're a good-looking guy.
Just one, really. Just one.
In the Fiero?
Come on, buddy. You know, I had a mission, and wasn't the mission
you
at the time.
You were focused. All right. But one's not bad.
Yeah.
It beats
one
what some
in Oklahoma.
Of these guys.
Oklahoma girl.
Yeah. Oh, blonde hair?
She was.
Great accent.
Little accent.
Okay, yeah, perfect. Okay.
I never met a girl from Oklahoma.
You get a B-.
Yeah, all right, B-. Not even. So I was going out there, and and when I got to California, the first place I went was Hollywood. And you go to Hollywood in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was
seedy.
Not like it looked on TV, you know?
Right.
And I'm looking around and I'm in tears. I'm looking up, you know, Hollywood and Vine, looking at the Capitol Records building, going, this is not what Hollywood looks like. Where's the palm trees? Where's the pretty girls?
Where's Disneyland?
Exactly. So that was the only other thing I knew in California was Disneyland. So they pointed me down to Orange County. First time in California. And I'm driving down and I see the palm trees and the fancy cars and the beaches and the pretty girls. I'm like, oh, this is what I envision California be like. And I'm still close enough to LA and the entertainment industry where I can, you know, make my mark. So I pick up a newspaper and I see a job selling keyboards at Guitar Center. So, okay, I'm going to go down there the next day. So I'm homeless now. The first 3 weeks I was in California, I was homeless. I was
sleeping in the Fiero?
I was sleeping under the pier at Huntington Beach. Because I figure, like, if you're going to be homeless, why not do it beachfront property?
Okay,
I mean, people pay tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, I got to stop you there because I travel the world, right, like you. And, like, I'll go back east, you know, New York, D.C., where there's a real homeless problem.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, how do you not just beg for enough money to move to Huntington Beach?
Start walking.
Right, exactly.
You'll get there eventually.
Exactly. And live under the pier
at Huntington Beach. You know?
Right.
I take showers. You know, I have
instead
those
instead of Second Avenue? Are you kidding me?
And right, I am. Yeah. Cold and the
You're
miserable.
A smart homeless man.
So there it
Good
was.
Job.
So there I was. And so I got the job the first day I was out there. I went down there. They said, yeah, you start tomorrow, kid. I said, great. And I went in and I had three t-shirts I brought with me. Well, one of those t-shirts was a brand new video game system from Japan. It hadn't even come out in America yet. It was called the TurboGrafx-16. But I loved video games so much. And this is back then. They didn't have Hot Topic where they have a million video game shirts, you know. And so this was very rare to have a video game t-shirt at this time. And I wore it that was my trophy. I wore it to work the first day, and the very first person who walked in worked for Richard Branson, Virgin, and they were starting a video game company right down the street. First person I worked. So I was in California 2 days, and I met this guy, and he saw my shirt. He goes, oh my gosh, do you know about video games? I'm like, I know everything about video games. He's like, do you want a job? I said, yes, doing what? He said, you play video games for us. Tell us what you think, and we'll pay you $6 an hour. I'm like, this is the greatest job on the planet.
Nice.
But I had worked out before I came to California that I need to make $10 an hour in order to support myself out here, to have my own apartment and everything.
Big budget, yeah.
So I was making $4.25 minimum wage at the time at the music store and $6 an hour now at Virgin. So I kept both jobs. So I worked 2 40-hour-a-week jobs, 80 hours a week, because I didn't know anyone out there.
Right.
And so I was homeless. I didn't have anyone.
And one of your jobs was playing video games. So you'd been doing that.
And one of the jobs was playing video games. Would have been doing that anyway.
Right.
So I was in California 3 days and I was in the video game industry. But the And then I would bug the vice president of Virgin, the company, every day. I said, please, whenever you need music, let me know. I'll do it for free. You don't even have to pay me. Just give me the opportunity. And he saw that kind of, you know, drive
passion.
And passion and everything. And so about 5-6 months later, we were working on the original Prince of Persia video game.
Yeah.
And they needed some sound for it. And so they said, hey, Tommy, give it a shot. And I did the music, ended up winning an award, Best Music of the Year. So they made me the music guy and stayed at Virgin.
Stop right there.
Yes.
Before we continue the interview, here's a word from our sponsor. Champions have tools that help them win, ranging from the strict diets to the shoes they choose to wear. When they go to the boardroom, a single tool stands out to make sure they are productive and get the best deal possible. Their Black Moleskin Notebook from Best Self Company. Check out the Best Self Journal at bestself.co. That's bestself.co. Okay, let's get back to the interview. Yeah. So, like, he's a karma guy. He's a visionary, Tommy, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, you're sitting there. You go from homeless to wearing a T-shirt, manifesting a video game job for a guy who owns Virgin.
Yeah.
And then because of your passion, focus, and intention, I believe, right, it's no accident that you get given an opportunity, but you seize the opportunity. And I mean, you're being humble and say, well, I wrote the music, blah, blah, blah. But people write music for all kinds of things and don't win the best music award. Well, and how old were you?
I was 21.
21 years old.
Yeah.
But you know what I like about this, and I tell people all the time, is you got to be all in.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And guys that are halfway in, they never succeed. Then they go to blame, shame, and justification why they didn't succeed. Every guy, Warren Moon, right? You're a Canadian.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Warren Moon is my business partner here.
Right.
My best friend. I tell him all the time, you're a talented quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And you got better and better. But you're really talented. The thing that impressed me is how many people
come from Southern California, are MVP of the Rose Bowl, and are humble enough to stay in Canada and play football for 6 years and keep at it to prove that they're the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I mean, when I speak to kids or, you know, students or whatever, you know, I always tell them, I hate the word luck. I really hate it.
Me too.
I despise it.
Me too. That's a pet peeve of mine.
It's insulting to me.
A total pet peeve.
When somebody says, oh, you're so lucky.
Yeah.
Now, luck had nothing to do with it, right?
Exactly.
And you say, well, but that guy came in.
That's not luck.
The store that day, and you were lucky to have that shirt. No. Was I lucky that I left my parents crying on the doorstep, that I cried myself to sleep every night under that pier, and I was scared, and I was homeless, and I was hungry? Was it luck?
Yeah.
Give me a break. So that's what I always tell people. The difference between, look, here's the reality. Everybody in this world, they have a dream. They have a great idea and they have a dream. The difference between the 1% the people who see their dreams come true, the successful, are the ones who actually get off their butts and do something about it. That's the only difference. Everybody's got $1 million idea, but it's the execution, it's that drive, and it's the determination. And one of the things that I found out early is that when if you have a goal, it's like I always say it, to me in my mind, I visualize it like it's a big mountain. It's this big treacherous mountain that I got to climb, and it's going to be torturous, and there's going to be times when I'm going to want to go back down the other way, and there's going to be pitfalls, and I'm going to slide back down along the way, but I'm going to keep going until I get to the top of that mountain, and nothing is going to get in my way. Well, once you've conquered that first thing, once you've got to the top of that mountain, that summit the first time, then you look around and you can see all these other mountains. But now that you've done it yourself, the first one, it's just a matter of what mountain do I want to pick next?
Right.
Because I know I can get to the top of any of those. Nothing will ever stop me.
And that philosophy is what I call plateau and go. Because a lot of people, and I did this once in my career as I was a multimillionaire and lost it all, mm-hmm. is you go up the mountain, surround yourself with the wrong people, the wrong ideas. You lose that imagination principles, that dream to be inspired, to be enthusiastic, entheos, connected to God, Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I've been like you, right? I'm a think and grow rich guy. It's not enough just to dream.
It's That's right.
You need discipline, strategy, awareness, hard work, determination, and persistence. Right? And that's what makes it happen. But if you can be like you, Tommy, this plateau and go, I'm at this plateau, this mountain, but oh my gosh, there's a bigger mountain over there. Now that I'm up here, I can see it.
Yeah,
and then you get to that one and all of a sudden you're like, oh my goodness, there's a whole nother mountain, a whole nother level of plateau and
but
go.
But you have no fear of climbing any of them
because you know
you can beat them up. It's just a matter of choosing which one you want.
It's imagination and action. So let's go from there because you've had quite a career. So you win this award and now you're known for music and video games. So take me to where your real inspiration came, the big daddy of them all, you know, what your career truly is today and what you did.
Yeah, so I stayed at Virgin for about 4 years, won Best Music of the Year 4 years in a row.
Not luck, not luck.
I did it, yeah, exactly. I put out the very first worldwide video game soundtrack album on Capitol Records. No one had ever put out video game music before like that. And so all of a sudden I had all the other companies calling me to want me to go leave Virgin and work for them. So I decided, well, I'm not going to do that. Why don't I just start my own company and I'll work for everyone. So when I left Virgin, I had about
And you were 26?
I was 25 at the time.
Nice.
I had about $2 million in my pocket of contracts.
Nice.
You know, when I left Virgin.
That beats 10.25 an hour.
Which is
working 80 hours a week.
And it's absolutely unheard of back then. Even today, that's
right.
You know, for a video game composer, it's pretty crazy. But I was kind of the only guy doing
Won the best music 4 years in a row.
So they all wanted me. So I was able to, you know, basically be my own price. And so I started my own company. I did that for many years. Then I started a TV show in the late 90s because I looked around and I said, What can, you know, there's no video game television shows, like a news magazine.
The ESPN of video games.
Yeah, because I was always behind the scene working on all these great games, but I never saw like behind, this is before YouTube, this is before anything. It's like the stories that went on and the interesting things that have to happen to create a video game, the art, the design, the management, the music, the everything was so incredible. So we created a show called The Electric Playground. And it's still running to this day. I was on the show for 12 years. It won an Emmy. It won a Telly Award.
Did you take ownership in the show or produce?
Yeah,
anything?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, was
probably, so you're, yeah, you're still, okay, good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
And then, so that happened from like 1995 and still going today. But I left in 2007 because in 2005, I again looked around and said, what's my passion now? So music, writing music was my passion. Then, you know, having a TV, producing a TV show, that was my passion. Then I wanted to perform live because that's like—
How many millions do you have in your pocket now?
In my pocket right now.
I know you got the Ferrari out front. I'm not going to spoil this.
There's a black credit card. That means limitless.
Infinity. You heard it here first. We know who's taking us out. It's Friday night. You know who's taking us out tonight.
It's in the millions.
Yeah, good.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You're still literally in your 30s?
No, I'm your age. I'm a week old. Okay. I'm a week younger than you.
Oh, that's right.
I looked on your Wikipedia page before I got here.
I know I look 60, but I'm as young as Tommy.
That's
look at
right.
that. This
that's
is terrible.
Right.
Oh my God. This is what happens.
1968, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh
me
God.
Too.
And
yeah.
you must be February, right?
I'm February.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Very good. I'm
Aquarius.
I'm 111, sign of the angel.
There you go.
There you go. He looks like he's 30. I look like I'm 60. We average to our age.
But that's a thing. You love what you do, and it you know, and I act like a kid. So
good.
And so then I wanted to perform live. So I created Video Games Live, and what that is it's all the great. I went to all the video game companies. I said I'm gonna license all the music and all the games from the company.
And they probably were laughing at you, like, you actually going
to
pay for that?
Complete. Well, no, I didn't pay for it.
They were paying me. Oh, right, to promote it.
Yeah, because it's marketing.
Right.
So, yeah.
And they're laughing, like,
yeah,
okay.
They're like, what are you talking about? I said, yes, I'm going to create a big orchestral show, and it's going to have synchronized video and lasers and lights and live action on the stage and interactive elements with the crowd and special effects, and it's going to be amazing. I'm going to reinvent symphonic music for a new generation of people. Because how many young kids, you know, go to the symphony?
Right.
Zero. And so everybody thought I was crazy because they said, look, here's the reality. People who go to a symphony normally, they don't play video games. And people who do play video games,
don't
go to a symphony. So you're totally screwed. No one's going to show up.
So people think you're crazy.
Yeah. So I got I went to all the different agencies, and William Morris was the one I chose. Mark Geiger there, who's an incredible head of, you know.
I know, yep,
he's
great guy.
You know, one of the greatest music agents on the planet. And he loved the idea. So I signed with those guys. And I said, look, the first show we're going to do is at the Hollywood Bowl with the LA Philharmonic. Let's go right for the top.
Yeah, why not?
Because my grandfather always told me, pick something you love, do something that you're passionate about. It'll never seem like a job to you.
Right.
And
well,
never
let me just stop
no.
you there again.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, because you and I live these, we're a month
parallel
apart.
Parallel lives. Yeah.
So my grandpa told me, you need three things.
Right, three things.
Number one, do what you love to do. A third of your life you're spent working.
Right.
Two, find one person to spend your life with as a liaison. You know, your partner, your spouse, whoever it is, because she'll be or he'll be, doesn't matter. You know, the liaison between you and your family, her family, your friends. You need one solid person in your life.
Okay.
And then finally he said, the third one's the easiest. Buy the best bed you can find, because you spend a third of your life sleeping and stupping, because he's from Russia.
Yeah.
And I think that's a legal word.
See,
to
I'm
say.
Lucky. I'm actually in the 1%. I'm what's called a super sleeper.
Oh.
So I can only sleep about 4 hours.
See, I'm a 5 hour, 11 to 4.
Yeah.
I wake up at 4.
There
I'm
you
telling
go.
You, man,
yeah,
there's some kind of moon thing going on here. Not Warren Moon, but like you and I think
one.
We have the same father.
So that
my
must
mom,
be.
That dirty,
know.
I won't say it.
No.
In respect
to
her.
That.
Oh my goodness. I gotta meet your dad though.
Yeah, that's right. So I wanted to do the show and I wanted to pick the Hollywood Bowl. And
that's
people
crazy.
People are telling me, like, look, you don't play your first show ever at the Hollywood Bowl. You like tour for 30 years, win
Steven
10
Tyler.
Grammys.
You might be his cousin, but you're not him.
And then maybe you get invited to the Hollywood Bowl. Right, exactly. And I'm like, no, we gotta do the bowl, So we did the Hollywood Bowl. I risked about $1.5 million, created the
Oh,
show.
You mean you were lucky again by risking a million
lucky.
And a half?
I was so lucky that people showed up. And people were like, you're lucky if 500 people show up. Well, 11,000 people showed up for the first
Sold
show.
Out.
And all of a sudden, I wasn't so crazy. And I've been doing that ever since. I started the company in 2002, did the first show in 2005. And I do 40, 50 shows all over the world, from China to Australia, Malaysia, Korea, all over Europe, Canada, all over South America. And, you know, last year, for example, I did 2 sold-out shows at the Bird's Nest, National Olympic Stadium in Beijing, China, 30,000 people a night. So, yeah. And so,
so what's next?
Well, you know, the thing is that since I, you know, kind of redefined symphony for a new generation of people, a lot of companies have been calling me up, companies like Disney and MGM and Paramount and you know, working with like, you know, a Led Zeppelin thing right now, where they want me to create symphonic shows for their, you know, for their
genre, right?
Yeah. So, which has been great. So I've kind of, you know, moved into this creative director role.
That's all. Has anyone approached you? Because I have an idea, and if they haven't, I want to do it with you. But because I think the most popular thing would be—
No one's listening to this, right?
Yeah,
no one's listening. Just me and you. Yeah.
It's my show, trust me. No. Only the 14 million people on Entrepreneur. thank God I have some friends. But I think the most popular music that people like nostalgically, emotionally attached to would be TV theme songs.
Sure, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Has anybody approached you for that?
Yeah, no.
But don't you think like people emotionally— Can we do that together? I mean, I'll invest. I'll get lucky with you.
It's great. No, I think it's a great idea.
As he parks 3 Ferraris outside, I'm in.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I bet you could still sing The Love Boat for me. Can
yeah,
you
well, I can't Come sing, but yeah. I can pay
Humming
somebody
for
to
me?
Sing.
Can you do it? Yeah.
I have the worst voice in the world. All right, well, we're coming to a close. I want to know one last question because we are brothers from another mother because this is ridiculous. I'm so impressed with you. I got to have you back on. And
totally.
I didn't have enough time in my office on a Friday in the studio to like get the 6 hours I need to really get to know you.
Sure.
But you and I can make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun together because you are definitely my kind of guy. So the big question to me is, what you've done all this stuff. You're a plateau and go guy. You're a think and grow rich, positive attitude, persistence,
the secret.
Determination, the secret. Yeah. But most importantly, right, I know you can manifest whatever you want. You and I believe you call January 1st your shopping day, right? You just pick out from the universe what you want, and it comes too fast almost.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. But most importantly, you can do whatever you want. And that's why I want to partner with you. Whatever you want, I know you can do.
Yep.
What legacy do you want to leave, though?
You know, it's interesting. From a career standpoint, you know, I've been called the person who's helped to change video game music. Because when a lot of people thought of video game music, they thought of Bleeps and Bloops, right? So being associated with someone who's changed an entire genre of music is pretty cool. In fact, I have a Guinness World Record for the person who's worked on the most video games in their lifetime, over 300 games.
Wow.
But and then after that, I got 2 other Guinness World Records, one for the
sleeping with the least amount of people being that good looking.
No, on their way to California. Right. Yeah. That was the, got that record. Okay. No, the other 2 records are the biggest symphony show ever viewed live, 752,000 people last year in China. And the other one was the longest running symphonic tour. We've done over 420 shows with Video Games Live. So, so now I was on the cover of Symphony Magazine a couple years ago, and they kind of referred saying that I'm the person who's helped change symphony, save symphonies around the world. Because, you know, all the old people are starting to, you know, pass away and they're not passing the torch. Young people aren't interested in being bored and dressing up in a tuxedo and everybody's got to be quiet. The music's about to begin. And so we've kind of switched that. I've combined rock and roll and technology with symphonic music and brought it together because that's what we grew up on. I want to make the symphony fun and stuff. So being the guy who kind of helped symphonic music after 300 years. You know, it wasn't only a couple hundred years ago, a bunch of loudmouth Italians like me, they all sat around a table and they said, how can we reinvent the symphony? And one guy said, I got an idea. Let's tell a story through the lyrics. And somebody said, I got an idea. Let's dress people up in costumes. And a guy got an idea. Let's make these elaborate sets on stage. And that's how opera was born. And so for me, I'm doing is like the opera for the 21st century.
Well, this is it because I can see I'm from, you know, the East Coast. That's where our parents met.
Yeah.
I was born in Ohio, Akron, Ohio, where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is. We represent a market, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but I think it's more interesting that Steven Tallarico and Tommy Tallarico, I think both are destined for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, if not even more importantly, the overall World Music Hall of Fame for what you're doing. I believe, and there's a book I want you to read, right? I was telling about Power of Intention by Wayne Dyer.
Yeah, I haven't read that one yet. I got to read that one.
And one of the key lines that I've learned from him, I'm not sure if he wrote it, but he quotes it, is if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And when I think of Tommy Tallarico, what he did is he changed the way that he looked at his life, at music and gaming as two passions. And he was able to make a lot of money and still does. Mm-hmm. You've helped a tremendous amount of people, including change and save maybe symphonies. And of course, have a lot of fun. That's why I want to do business with you. Yeah. I am so grateful to have you here. I know you're a gratitude guy.
Every day.
This is Entrepreneur, the Playbook, with one of my new heroes and mentors, Tommy Tallarico. Thanks so much. Join us next time.
Awesome. Thank you, Dave.
Playbook is produced by Nathan Lotka, and our media partner is Entrepreneur.com. Be sure to tune in next Monday, where we feature another story on how a sports icon went from the playing field to the boardroom.